Hello, and welcome to Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne here at 88.5 KRFY, Community Radio for North Idaho. I am Dr. Joanne, and I hope you'll enjoy the medical topics I've chosen to present at 8 a.m. the first Monday of every month. You can also catch the show at 8 a.m. on the third Monday. And our show and every show at KRFY is on your radio at 88.5 FM or can be streamed at krfy.org from anywhere in the world. We even have podcasts if you go to the krfy.org homepage. This month, I'm featuring World Environment Day, which is June 5th, to talk about conserving our beautiful environment here in the Northwest and its relation to health benefits for all ages, from toddlers to senior citizens. I have two representatives from the Kinnick-Sioux Land Trust, which I may abbreviate KLT. Katie Cox, Executive Director, and Reagan Plum, Conservation Manager, are here with me. Tell us a little bit about yourselves and about your roles at KLT.
Hi, Joanne. It's nice to be with you today. I'm Katie. I am fortunate enough to be the executive director of Kinnick-Sioux Land Trust. I think I have the best job in the entire region. Reagan might arm wrestle me for that. But I spend my days supporting the work that we do at Kinnick-Sioux Land Trust. I spend my evenings, usually you'll find me on the trails, in the community, enjoying the many benefits of living here, including the water and the forests.
And I am Reagan. Good morning, Joanne. Thanks for having us here today. And Katie has the second best job, actually, in the region. It is mine is the best. I'm the conservation director at KLT, and I take so much pride in my work supporting private landowners to permanently protect special places across our service area in North Idaho and Northwest Montana. It means a lot to me.
Thank you. And also in the studio with us is Susie Perez from our morning show here at KRFY. I call her my executive producer. She enables KRFY to offer these discussions. Hi, Susie, and thank you for being here.
Well, good morning, Dr. Joanne. You know, KRFY is very fortunate that you stepped in to host this show, Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne. It's a great addition to the KRFY local programming schedule. I'd like the listeners to know a little bit about you, Dr. Joanne. You are a retired pediatrician from Columbus, Ohio, who worked primarily in private practice for over 30 years. But you also worked in the Learning Disability Clinic and in the outpatient clinic at Nationwide Children's Hospital in Columbus, Ohio. You served as media spokesperson for the American Academy of Pediatrics Ohio chapter in the Central Ohio Pediatric Society, appearing on TV, radio, and print media. So you're right at home here at KRFY. And just thanks again for having this show. It's fantastic.
Thank you, Susie. This is June, and World Environment Day is June 5th. The program will be featured this year in the Republic of Korea, although it is celebrated worldwide. June 5th was initially designated as World Environment Day by the UN in 1972 and has been celebrated every year since 1973. The day is the biggest international day for the environment, led by the UN Environment Program, and of course their initials, UNEP. Tens of millions of people participate, either online or in person, at sites around the world in this largest global platform for environmental outreach. It's interesting, plastic pollution is the topic this year, and we've read so much about it, about animals ending up with the plastic in their stomachs, and we generate 430 million tons of plastic yearly, two-thirds of which become waste and end up in both landfills and the ocean. The United Nations actually has sustainable development goals, and there were five that I think are most applicable to our guests here today. Those are climate action, sustainable production and consumption, protection of the seas and oceans, and I added rivers and streams, and repair of the ecosystem and retaining biodiversity. These goals lead directly to our guests from Kinnick-Sioux Land Trust, especially as they relate to the health of our environment and people of all ages here in the North Idaho Panhandle and contiguous counties in Montana, Washington, and I think even we're stretching into Canada. Is that correct? Or at least your Indian tribe, one of the Indian tribes does. My husband and I were first introduced to the Kinnexu Land Trust just as the name of the organization was changed from the Clark Fork Conservancy to Kinnexu Land Trust. We received KLT stickers to put on the Clark Fork Conservancy water bottles we received as favors at a summer event at the Panada, which featured wild and wonderful movies about not only our outdoor pursuits, but our conservation efforts. So again, let's welcome Katie and Reagan here and begin with the history of KLT.
Thank you, Joanne. That was a great introduction. And it reminded me a lot of KLT's mission, which is caring for the land and people of the Kinnexu region, because we do really focus on stewardship and conservation of the land, but also caring for the communities that rely on that land. We believe that the health of the two are inextricably linked. So a little bit of history. The Clark Fork Conservancy, actually, you shortened the name. It was originally the Clark Fork Ponderay Conservancy, or the CFPOC, which...
a mouthful.
I always thought was a mouthful.
Lots of letters.
Was born in 2002 out of the relicensing work that Avista did with their partners at the management committee, Avista's management committee. And that group, as one of a number of innovations to address their requirements for protection, mitigation, and enhancement as part of the relicensing of the dams that they operate on the Clark Fork River, decided to create a land trust organization to carry out their conservation work. So that was in 2002. They established the CFPOC. And then that organization worked as a support organization for Avista initially, primarily doing conservation work to benefit native trout and tributaries of the Lower Clark Fork River. And then in 2012, the Land Trust became a standalone 501c3 and started to branch out and do a range of other types of conservation work. The name change happened about that same time. And then in 2017, the group now known as Kinnexu Land Trust, or KLT, really started leaning hard into what we call community conservation work in an effort to reach a larger number of residents in the communities that we serve and grow our relevance.
It's just become such a multifaceted, amazing, I guess that word's probably overused in many ways, but organization. You have so many different things that you're doing and so many things that are so worthwhile for the community. Katie, why don't you define land trust for us? Because this was the first land trust that I came in contact with, and then we found that some my husband's fraternity brother lived in northern Michigan, and there's quite a big land trust up there in the Petoskey, Traverse City area.
Yes, you'll find land trusts all over the United States doing the same work that we're doing, maybe slightly different. Every land trust really responds to their community and the environment that they work in, but stretched across the United States and into Canada, and actually across many nations of our world. So land trusts work in their communities to conserve habitat for wildlife and plants, secure water quality, which, of course, is really important to us here with the beautiful water that we have in our region, ensures land is available for future generations, provides equitable access to nature, protects family farms and ranches, which is, again, really important, especially in our region, and tackles climate resiliency. We build healthy communities together, working to and listening really closely to the communities and the challenges. And that is one of the reasons, Joanne, you talk about how multifaceted we are. And really, it's the work that we do with our ear to our community, trying to understand really how we can serve and what unique qualities that we have that can help to take on these community challenges.
It's sort of like a snowball going downhill. I mean, if you conserve land and then people are able to get out and be active, then they're healthier.
Yes.
And so it can be of any ages. You can have a flat trail for more elderly people mm-hmm. and steeper things for the younger and the adventurous. When I, again, first became associated with the organization, I don't know for sure, there might have been two or three employees. Mm-hmm. And so tell us about how many employees you have now and all the variety of their roles and their jobs.
Right now, we have 9 employees. It blossoms during the summertime. Every employee, though, you'll find has one thing that we really cherish and steward at the Land Trust is having a work-life balance. And so many of our employees are choose to work about 25 hours a week. And we have, there are two of us that are more on the full time, which is the two sitting here, Reagan and Katie. But we have 9 employees. We have a director of communications. We have an operations manager, Anne, who's in our office doing all of the back end, very critical work. And Anne is amazing. She's been the longest employee with Kinnexu Land Trust. Janine is also in that office supporting Anne and also supporting our fundraising work that we do, working with our partner sponsors. We have Brianna Larson, who is our director of education, which I hope we get a chance to talk about our education work today because I think it really connects to the health work that you do. Sean Deller is an assistant educator, and he works in support of our education efforts as well. We have Jeff Thompson, who you might see if you're up at Pine Street Woods. He is our land manager, and he lives on property at Pine Street Woods. We have Kayla Mosier. Kayla works in our Montana office. We have an office over in Thompson Falls, Montana, and Kayla helps do that community conservation work, supporting the communities of Thompson Falls and Knoxon and all the communities, Hot Springs, Plains, all those communities over in Sanders County, Montana. I should have been doing this on my fingers. We have Marcy. I got them all.
Yeah. You got them all.
Woohoo! Yeah.
But I mean, again, that just shows the diversity of the really the programs that you are now offering.
I should add too, because this is really exciting, and since we're in the summer season, we have student interns that just started. We have 3 interns this year. Our internship program is a program that has now been going on for 5 years, and we work to bring students that ideally they're students with a connection here because housing is always an issue, but often they are graduates of Sandpoint High School. They're now in college or freshly out of college, working in the fields that, either environmental science or education. So they come on staff in the summer in order to help us do all of that work that happens to snowball in the summer. And then we also bring on more camp staff for Camp Kinnexu, which is just beginning at the beginning of June as well.
So exciting. Susie, do you have any comments for this group?
It's definitely changed over the years. And what I would say, the diversity really supports our community in the ways that you mentioned previously, you know, to bring vibrancy and resilience to human beings mm-hmm. as they walk through our beautiful area. Mm-hmm.
So what do you think is your biggest accomplishment? You've done so many really exciting things over the last 5 to 10 years. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you feel is your biggest accomplishment and a little background about it?
This was a tough question, Joanne. And Katie and I kicked it back and forth. And several milestones in KLT's history come to mind, including our first being awarded accreditation through the Land Trust Alliance's Accreditation Committee. That happened in 2016. And achieving that standard was really important for our organization because it proves that we follow the highest possible standards and practices in our conservation work. We closed our largest conservation easement just last year over on Pritchard Creek in Shoshone County in partnership with Idaho Forest Group. That was close to 2,000 acres, so that was an enormous conservation win. But as an organization, probably the biggest achievement that KLT has accomplished over our 23-year history now is bringing Pine Street Woods to our community. So as many of you might know, that 180-acre property was purchased after an extensive capital fundraising campaign, which is how Katie Cox got acquainted with KLT. She was a huge part of that, and we were able to open it to the public in 2019. And bringing that property to our community has not only built a lot of awareness of our organization and what we do, but it's also had a profound impact on both residents here in our community and also in the larger region. It's allowed people a close-to-town place where they can get out and connect with a natural forest. It's not a city park. It's really a native working forest environment. We've worked hard to make it as accessible as possible, which is why you have to drive up that three-quarter mile kind of gnarly in the winter gravel road to get to the very top, because we wanted people to be able to get out of their vehicles and be greeted by a flat, open space with welcoming signs and a restroom and just trying to break down barriers to getting outside, because as I know we're going to be talking about later today, there are so many tremendous health benefits to getting out in nature and moving around. So Pine Street Woods was our ultimate response.
Well, and it's so interesting. We love telling people that we can go hiking for 3 miles, 5 miles, and you know, actually ride bikes to the site. You can go from Pine Street Woods to Sherwood Forest, which we all were knew about originally. And so when then Sherwood Forest just kind of exploded with the addition of Pine Street Woods. So having trails that are so accessible is really a benefit for the community. Tell us a little bit about the mental health aspects of having nature out your back door.
Yeah, there's so many mental health benefits, and we found it was very interesting for us because when you think about it, Pine Street Woods opened in 2019, and we all know what happened in 2020. And the fact that it seemed very fortuitous that Pine Street Woods was ready to sort of welcome our entire community who was seeking the calming effects of nature during the COVID pandemic. And we saw in those first years, over 20,000 visits to Pine Street Woods. And the mental health benefits are numerous, and I could list quite a number: reducing stress and anxiety. Nature helps, because we're talking medical, nature helps lower cortisol levels. That's the hormone that's linked to stress. It boosts mood and happiness. I can't tell you the number of times. I swear in a week, I'll get probably a handful of people that will come up to me and tell me how happy it made them to be able to walk in the woods this week. So sunlight and fresh air stimulate those endorphins and the serotonin. It improves focus and mental clarity. So time in green spaces helps reset attention and reduce mental fatigue. And we find that is really critical when we think about all of the work we do with the Lake Pend'Oreille School District in our nature education work, getting those kids outside and a reset for their attention and just reducing the mental fatigue that they have being in a classroom. It enhances our social connections, strengthening relationships and reducing feelings of loneliness. And supports better sleep. All that fresh air, we all know, especially those of us who are mothers and fathers, the more we can get our kids outside running around, just drinking in that fresh air, the more likely they are to go sleep well at night, as well as ourselves. And promotes mindfulness. Being outside encourages and presents awareness and relaxation. So in addition to that, there's all the obvious physical benefits as well to being time spent outside.
It's been really fun to follow, too, like the improved signage over the year. I mean, the original rudimentary 2019 signage and going, okay, do we go this way or that way? But again, after you've been at the property enough, but also the new signage, I mean, has been absolutely wonderful. It's very, very easy to follow the trails now.
We're still working on it, though. We still feel like we can even do a little bit better. It's hard because you'll find when you get there that the trail leads out from the parking lot is south and north is up, but it's like, do we twist our sign upside down? Or so I'm glad to hear that you have found the signage effective.
There's one time we came into, actually Sherwood Forest from a backside from Cedar Ridge, which I guess you can't do anymore. And John kept going, oh, well, how do we know where to go? How do we know where to go? I went, just listen for the highway.
Exactly. You know, good.
Just go down toward the noise. You know, there's a little bit of noise. And mm-hmm. so, you know, just keep going left and left and left.
Exactly.
You know, don't go back right too far, you know, and you'll make it down to the bottom. And we did. And we didn't get lost. But anyway, there were times in Pine Street Woods. And now I have a friend that taught me exactly where all the sculptures are. So I can take people on sculpture walks. Let's segue a little bit into camp. Because I remember talking to the previous executive director when we were being solicited to be supporters and sponsors. And taking a walk, you know, having to hop over a barbed wire fence and taking a little walk on the property and coming to that beautiful meadow. And when I was in high school, I was a camp counselor at a property, a city park right along the Milwaukee River. And it just made me think of, gee, you need a shelter house and have a camp up here. Now, I don't know if it was, it probably wasn't my idea. It was probably all of your idea. But, you know, it was very rewarding to see that that's where Camp Kinnik-Soo is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Camp Kinnik-Soo is beloved by many in our community, and having a place for it, having a space that the kids can call all their own. We there's no fence around it, but people just know when camp is in session, they know that the area that the kids have, and they know sort of to keep their distance from there, let the kids create, let the kids have this magical space of their own. And if you happen to go in it when they're not there, you will notice just... And you can actually also notice this around Pine Street Woods. If you're looking very closely in all different areas of Pine Street Woods, you'll notice forts that have been built by our camp kids. But if you go down and camp, you'll see where they've created fairy houses. There's the fire ring that they sit in a circle before camp begins in the morning, and they have their, you know, they have their morning chats. You'll notice all these wonderful aspects of children in the forest and what their minds create and their hands create. Just being able to have that freedom to take off their shoes and be that connected to a wild place.
It's really a wonderful, wonderful place for a camp. I remember when the camp was at the Idaho property, which is now, of course, subdivisions, but it's wonderful the Pine Street Woods then came into existence, so you could have a camp in even a more beautiful setting. Let's talk about your other big project recently, the Save the Sled Hill. That was the movie that we attended in February was just so, so very interesting, and it's such a wonderful project. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that one?
Yeah, I'll start on that. What a fun project to be part of, the Save the Sled Hill campaign. Wow. We, from the time that we first acquired Pine Street Woods in 2019, that Sled Hill parcel, which is the 48 acres that kind of bends around Pine Street as you're approaching Pine Street Woods, was always on our radar. And we thought what a special addition that would make, especially considering the historic Sled Hill there, which has been known and loved by our community since the 1940s. So 80 years of a legacy of public access and joy and recreation there on that sledding hill, even prior to, in fact, it was the original ski hill in Sandpoint before Schweitzer opened, and then became more of a sledding hill once people started skiing up on the big hill. So when that property went on the market in, 2022, I want to say, it was immediately brought to our attention, and really the community came to us and said, we have to save this property. It means so much. Kinnik-Soo Land Trust, will you help us make this happen? And, of course, we jumped right in because this work is so aligned in terms of both conservation and supporting community health and getting people outdoors, so aligned with our work. So after, I should note that an essential part of being able to complete that process was the angel donors who stepped in and purchased it because we knew we would need some time to fundraise. So without those special community members, this wouldn't have been possible. So those angels came in, secured it for us, and it took us close to 2 years to raise the money to complete the purchase. And we finally did that on October 8th of 2024. So it's been, eight months now that we've been so proud to bring the Sled Hill to the community and be able to guarantee that it will always be available for children to laugh and play on and for educational programs. The ponds, we're really excited to develop, it's not the right word, but to establish fishing opportunities there in the summertime for children and ice skating in the winter. Later this summer, we'll be doing some parking lot and road enhancement work to improve the infrastructure and make it easier to access. So really, really excited to bring the Sled Hill to our community.
Very cool. So it will be also utilized in the summer. You talked about the pond, and I know there are some trails there. So it's being able to use it winter and summer will be a big advantage for the community.
Yeah, one of the great benefits there, Joanne, just to jump in real quickly, is that people will be able to just park at the Sled Hill and save that drive up the Pine Street Woods Access Road because there will be connecting trails there. So, yep.
So your car won't get quite as dirty.
Right.
You don't have to go to the car wash. Must love Pine Street Woods.
We should open a car wash at the bottom of Pine Street
Woods.
That's
a great
idea. And we actually had a neighbor and he hiked with the Monday Hikers, and he washed his car all the time. And I was like, it just gets dirty the next day. But I was interested, too, that you've expanded into Montana, and probably you were there before, but the Cabinet View Nature Area is a recent accomplishment. Is that true?
Cabinet View Nature Area, it came about right when I came on board. I remember doing the putting the sign up, at least.
Okay. Yeah, I'd say 2017 or 18 is when we acquired that property.
Yeah. And that's a really, I always tell people, it's a really good Sunday drive for people that live in the Sandpoint Ponderay area. It's probably about 30 minutes to get there back. You know, it's somewhat in Clark Fork's backyard, right on the Montana-Idaho border. And it's a little mini Pine Street Woods. It has trails, but it has a beautiful pond and sometimes active beavers over in the pond. So to get out for a day, it has a pavilion so you can go and pack a picnic and take a walk, and many birds on site. So it's a great place to go and explore. We're happy to have that within our public access lands, as well as have that as a space for all of our community members over in the Sanders County area.
Is there, if I would go to the website, is there a map?
There are directions.
How to get there.
Mm-hmm. There's directions on our website when you go under public access properties.
Oh, great. If you drive to the Clark Fork Pantry and stop for a cinnamon roll and then basically turn right, you'll run right into it.
Okay, exactly. So it's toward the river as opposed
it's across the river.
When you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you cross the river at Clark Fork and then drive down River Road there to the Montana state line.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to, that's kind of where we kayak. We sometimes do that to kayak, go out the road to the right.
Mm-hmm. And then go down the river there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's circle back a little bit to mission and vision, because, again, I think it tells us why we're here. If anyone wants to take that, that'd be great.
Yes. Again, caring for the lands and people of the Kinnexu region today, tomorrow, and forever. So you'll notice that we very intentionally include both land and people in our mission statement, because the two are intertwined together, and when you have healthy land, you have healthy communities and vice versa. So that's why our focus is not just strictly on conservation, but really on trying to use the tools in our toolbox to improve and enhance the health of our communities as well.
So how many acres are now under your responsibility? are currently your responsibility? How many projects are there?
Yeah, we currently have a little over 6,000 acres in conservation, and that represents about 40 projects, depending on how you count it. But the bulk of those acres are privately owned. They're not owned by Kiniksu Land Trust. They're owned by independent families, private citizens that have a really strong connection to their special place in the world and wanted to ensure that it would continue to be cared for and kept intact into the future. So those people have entered into voluntary legal agreements, conservation agreements or conservation easements that are held by Kiniksu Land Trust in order to ensure that their farms, forests, ranches, forested properties along beautiful creeks and streams will always remain undivided and minimally developed into the future. So, yeah.
Does having the accreditation help people know that it's a responsible organization so that, you know, I own this land and, wow, I really don't want a subdivision here? And they've heard of the Kiniksu Land Trust or Land Trust across the country. Is that one of the ways people learn?
Absolutely. Yeah, that accreditation tells people that we have gone through a very rigorous review of our policies and our practices, and that we do things in the best possible way, where we've demonstrated that competency. We have a proven track record, and we are a trusted partner in conservation.
That accreditation, there is a lot of work that goes behind that, and it happens every 5 years. We're actually coming up in the next 2 years on another reaccreditation. And the amount of standards and practices that we have to show that we have policies documenting that we do this work with the utmost integrity following those standards, it's quite a lengthy document, but it really does show that we take the work that we do seriously and we take the stewardship and monitoring and all of the parts that come along with being in a conservation agreement very seriously.
Okay. Well, the pillars of the organizations being conservation, education, and community, we've talked about somewhat of all three, but let's talk a little bit more about the educational component. We mentioned Camp Kiniksu. How many children are there, or how many sessions do you have?
We have 6 sessions of Camp Kiniksu. There are 150 children we serve through that program. It is divided into 3 different age groups, 6 through 8, 9 through 12, and then our last one is a teen expedition that goes from age 13 to 17. And for that one, you know, each of the different programs sort of increase the children's time spent in nature. And so the youngest, the program is 9 to 3. And then for the next age group, it is the 9 to 3, but then the children stay overnight at Pine Street Woods on one of the evenings. And then, like I said, the teen expedition, we take them on a canoe journey up at Priest Lake. And so they spend the week going around the lake and doing camp around the lake, also supporting our partners at the Forest Service, taking on a service project up at Priest Lake as well. So you grow with the camp. Many of our campers have been with us since they were age 6. And my daughter did it last year at the age of 15 and is looking forward to doing it again this year at the age of 16. So it really, the program spans in terms of the interest level of students, and really the week is spent connecting these children very deeply to nature. They're not, you know, they definitely leave us on Friday very dirty, not afraid to get more dirty, shoes off, and ready to spend the rest of summer outside. I think that program is amazing. The other program in our education work that has really been blossoming since we started it in around 2017 is our work in partnership with Lake Ponderay School District.
Okay, that's what I was going to get to next. Is that the rewilding the playground, or just in general with other programs?
Yeah, too? Rewilding is one part of the program. The program really has expanded. In 2017, it started as Dave, who is our director of education at the time, would partner with certain classrooms and certain schools to give kids in those classes and teachers the experience of coming outside and doing meaningful nature education outside the classroom. When we acquired Pine Street Woods, of course, then that just increased the opportunities for kids, for schools to partner with us and get their classes through, you know, get bus rides, field trips to Pine Street Woods and have a really way more connected experience in the wild. One of the things that in 2020, we saw more schools because of the COVID pandemic needing to spend, you know, wanting to increase the work that they did with our education team. And we realized that there is only a certain capacity. Like we only, yeah, at the time we had Dave, we had Brianna, but there was only so much that they could do to reach all of our, at that time, all of our elementary schools, some of our high schools or our middle school. And so we started beginning to discuss what it would look like if the schools instead were hiring outdoor educators. And so fast forward to today, and we've had eight schools now move to change a position, or when a position, somebody leaves within the school, they've changed the position to an outdoor educator. So we have 8 schools with outdoor educators on staff. So the kids get that outdoor education at least once a week, sometimes twice a week, depending on the schools. And now Brianna, who is our director of education, and Sean Deller, they work to mentor those teachers. And so just last week, they had a mentorship day where all of the teachers come together. Brianna actually brought in somebody from the Monarch Butterfly Group, as well as the Garden Group. And then they taught them the bow drill and can bring the bow fire-making drill into the schools. So what we're trying to do is give those teachers the tools and the curriculum and also the supplies. We've written a lot of grants in order to get them the supplies they need to be active outdoor educators. And then what we have found with all of these outdoor educators is that many of them do not have wild places right outside their classroom door. And that's where the rewilding playground work has come in, where we're taking spaces close into the schools and we're bringing, in some cases, wilderness to them. In other places like Kootenai Elementary, where they had a somewhat wild space, we're making it, we're bringing in outdoor classrooms, a bird blind, and more seamless trails in order to utilize the space.
Okay. Well, I just want to remind people that you are listening to KRFY 88.5 Community Radio for North Idaho. And this is Medical Musings, and we're speaking with two representatives from Kinnick-Sioux Land Trust, Katie Cox, the Executive Director, and Reagan Plum, the Conservation Director, Manager. I thought it was very interesting that when I went to the website again and saw the links at the bottom with the Native American tribes, mm-hmm. that you could actually click on each tribe and learn more about them. And their websites were amazing.
Yes.
I mean, what the Kalispell Indians are doing, mm-hmm. from being, you know, again, we always heard that the numbers have got so very low, but they have like, what, 20 businesses, mm-hmm. somewhere in the Idaho Panhandle. How do you pronounce the Indian name for Kalispell? The Q-L-I-S-P-E?
Quilispi.
Quilispi, mm-hmm. okay. And
I hope I'm not. That is the closest I've been able to come to it. The Kutanaha, uh-huh. which is our northern tribe, and the Skitswish, yeah. which is the Coeur d'Alene tribe.
Yeah.
And so, yes, we have, we honor our partnerships with our tribal partners, and we're really grateful for all of the work that they do with us. We have a very close relationship with the Kalispell tribe and are involved in many projects with the Kalispell tribe, and are grateful for the learning and the learning that we get to do by being a partner with them.
That's so very interesting. One other educational component we missed, though, was the folk school. And I've just seen that increase, you know, in the last, what, 5 years or more, from, you know, one or two classes, mm-hmm. to classes all the time. So tell us about the folk school.
Well, the folk school came about as a result of parents who would drop off and pick up their children at Camp Kinnick-Sue and notice how much fun they were having and remark to our staff, when are you going to develop something for us so we can, you know, just enjoy this connection with nature so much? So that's how the folk school was born. And it's in its, I think, fourth year now.
Yeah.
The mission of the folk school is to... Oh, gosh. Katie, can you help me?
Yeah.
Foster. I'm going to stumble here.
Yeah.
Stewardship through the sharing of traditional crafts and music.
Good job.
Yeah. Yes. I think I got pretty close to it.
You got pretty darn close.
Yeah. So our dream here is to, one, support local artisans. We have so many local talented local artisans and craftspeople in our community, and to provide a platform for those people to share their passion and share their skills with adults, young adults, even teenagers, in creating arts and crafts that where people are using their hands and connecting with nature. So that can mean a lot of different things, from, you know, basketry to herbal medicine walks. I think this spring session has a lot of new creative crafts. I noticed that you can learn how to make a dinner bell. You can make a dinner bell.
Yeah, with our blacksmithing yeah. team. And the blacksmithing group also has a blacksmith club. So if you're really interested in blacksmithing, I don't know if that's an actual word, then you can join the blacksmith club.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Do you bring in Native American representatives for some of the crafts? Or
We haven't at this point had any artisans that have stepped forward with that background. So that would be lovely.
Susie?
Well, in listening to all this, this is just a blanket statement. The work you're doing is amazing. But also, I'm wondering, it's kind of geared towards children, but not really, maybe the child in all of us.
Exactly.
That connection to nature that is vital, and as we move forward, very vital. But who do you consult with? Because the scope of the work you're doing is very diverse. I mean, it mm-hmm. seems like you're always finding the next thing to put energy and time into. Who do you consult with? Who directs you? Where do you get your inspiration?
I look forward to hearing Reagan's answer to this question as well. But really what we look to for our inspiration is our community. And listening to our community, and it's just like, as Reagan said, we were hearing from the parents and other members of the community about wanting to connect with nature, and in a way that involved our hands, involved sitting together with other members of our community, getting to know people that we might not know on a daily basis. So really that inspiration comes from our community, and it's with the trust of a great board of directors that gives us the space in order to explore the initiatives that we bring forward. But again, there's a lot of vetting and incubating that happens amongst, we have a phenomenal team at Kinnick-Sue Land Trust. And so there's a lot of vetting that happens around the big conference room table when we decide to take on a new initiative. But really that those initiatives truly are led by our community and listening to them.
Yeah, I'd add to that. That's exactly how I was going to respond, mm-hmm. is community first, our amazing board of directors. And then we're also members of two wonderful state coalitions that support land trusts. Here in Idaho, we're members of the Idaho Coalition of Land Trusts, or ICOLT. And then in Montana, the Montana Association of Land Trusts, or MALT. And those are our partners in this land trust work. We gather on a regular basis and support each other, share ideas, brainstorm, problem solve. And then at the national level, there's the Land Trust Alliance, which is the national umbrella organization that supports land trusts across the country and oversees that accreditation work. So many levels of support and inspiration and collaboration.
Perfect.
Wonderful. When I went to the website, I was, you know, just amazed again at all the different arms you were, or programs, projects that you were undertaking. Can we learn a little bit about Sand Creek Connections? I went to the introduction of it, but I know you'd been working on it for years or several years, a few years. So we can understand a little bit more about the Sand Creek Connection project.
Yeah, Sand Creek Connections, you're right, we've been working on it for a couple years, and this project is focused primarily on the Sand Creek corridor between Popsicle Bridge and the Schweitzer Cutoff. And it came out of the realization that this is an ecological gem that's sited right in the middle of a busy urban, if you can call our community urban, corridor, including Sandpoint and Ponderay, right along Highway 95. But it's so rich and it's so diverse with the wetlands and the stream and the wildlife and the quiet. In collaboration with some of our partners, we thought, wow, if we don't do some planning work around this corridor at the rate that growth is happening, it could be lost forever, and what a shame that would be. So we got together. We do much of our work in partnership, as we've conveyed here in visiting with you, with the Kalispell Tribe, the Kinnickinnick Native Plant Society, the cities of Sandpoint and Ponderay. Am I missing somebody there?
I think Trust for Public
Trust
Land.
Trust for Public Land, right. Mm-hmm. And applied for a support grant through the National Park Service that's called the Rivers, Trails, and Conservation Assistance Program. And we were so excited to receive that grant. The grant doesn't actually provide funds. It provides a technical advisor to help our group work through this planning process. So then we got the initiative off the ground, and our work here has been really not to create a plan for Sand Creek, but to establish a community-informed vision for that corridor. So the members of our group haven't been writing that vision ourselves. We've spent the last couple years conducting outreach and seeking to understand what our community envisions for that section of creek. And we've just completed about 2 years of outreach and compiling input through surveys and open houses and mailings. And now we're putting all that together into a cohesive plan, which we hope to eventually take to the cities of Ponderay and Sandpoint in hopes that they will adopt that plan in some form so that it can be in position to shape future zoning or development decisions that happen around that corridor. So great project.
Well, we have several friends who live from the Popsicle Bridge north. And so when I went to the meeting, it's like, what is it, their property? Is there an easement? You know, what, how can you do some of the work that you're doing if it's private property?
Yeah, great question. It's really the creek corridor. We absolutely want to acknowledge all of the private ownership within that creek corridor, and KLT owns a parcel in there too, as do the cities of Sandpoint and Ponderay, and various private landowners. And that group is who we went to first because we wanted to hear first and foremost from them, and incorporate their thoughts and views into this planning process. So what can we do there, considering it's mostly in private land? Well, we can educate the public about that private land ownership in order to avoid trespass issues. We can educate the landowners and the general public about the importance of water quality and streamside protections and respecting the wildlife.
And I would just say, a lot of the work that you'll see in the plan has to do with the care and protection of that area. So a lot of it is on for those private landowners. It isn't as you would say, like action on their land. Okay. It's education about this ecosystem that they live in and how they potentially have an impact and how we can make that impact as light as possible. I wouldn't say there are easements in it. Like Reagan said, the cities of Ponderay and Sandpoint own property in there. So there's, the potential on those properties to do noxious weed mitigation. So there are there are a lot of layers of the plan that talk about, how to improve habitat, how to hold habitat, right? And conservation easements are a great opportunity for potentially some of those private landowners if they want to, over time, make sure that creek corridor is protected in perpetuity.
What we're not trying to do is propose any sort of a linear trail along the creek.
That's just what I was going to ask. Yeah. Was like, so it's not like you're going to put a trail across.
No. And that was an early fear that we've really worked hard to dispel. We have the utmost respect for those private properties, and we're not trying to bring the public onto private properties or, you know, in any way infringe on the rights of those private landowners.
Yeah, I just wanted people, our listeners especially, to be able to visualize this properly. Mm-hmm. We're almost out of time, so I'd like to just, you have so many projects that we've talked about, wonderful projects. How do you support yourselves? From donations, partners, sponsors, grants? Tell us a little bit about that.
And then all of those things you just said. And it's so critical. Like, we could not do the work that we do without that amazing public support that we get from our friends and donors and new friends to the organization. A huge part of our what we use in order to do this work are those individual donations. We also have a partner sponsor program. Thank you to Dr. Joanne for being a part of that sponsor program. And that partner sponsor program is for both businesses and individuals who really wanting to invest on a year-to-year basis in the organization. That is huge. We do write about 50 grants a year in order to help support special projects, programs, and our daily, our daily operational costs. So all of those things really go, all of those, you know, three buckets go in to support our work. And again, it has to, you know, we have to do that annually, year after year after year. But, and we're so grateful for all of the people within our community that see the importance of our work and choose to make that investment every year, year after year.
Wonderful. Any other questions you have, Susie?
I'm just thinking, you're really working for the health and welfare of our community, the land, and the people. Mm-hmm. And it is a true, beautiful thing to see partnerships in that way that you just described.
Yeah.
So good work.
Thanks, Susie.
Anything we missed? Or I know one, the Kinnexu Lumber.
Oh, yes. Kinnexu Lumber. So this is one of our revenue. You know, we constantly think about other ways to generate revenue besides the three that I just mentioned. And Kinnexu Lumber, it actually came out of a big wind event at Pine Street Woods in 2020. And we had so much blowdown. Our local partners at Idaho Forest Group, who partner with us in so many different ways, helped us take some of that lumber. There was a stack that they couldn't take. And so a partnership blossomed with the Bonner Soil and Water Conservation District to purchase a small lumber mill. And we have been processing lumber since 2020 out of your community forest and creating wood products for you to purchase. And those purchases that you make, and we pretty much can, to a point, process most any type of lumber that you need for your chicken coop or your garden or your side of your barn. All of the money that goes to Kinnexu Lumber goes to support the work of Kinnexu Land Trust.
That's wonderful. Fantastic. You must come from the entrepreneur side of life. So. Well, Katie and Reagan, thank you so much for joining me today. It was so informative to learn about the vast scope of Kinnexu Land Trust. And thank you all for listening to Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne. Please do remember that this is a medical information show. It does not substitute for discussing your concerns with your medical provider. And especially if you're motivated now to get out on those trails and you haven't done exercise in X number of years, do be sure you speak with your doctor about your fitness level, and we'd like you to keep working on improving that fitness. Please tune in next month on July 7th when we'll be talking about the National Recreation and Parks. This is 88.5 KRFY Community Radio for North Idaho.